Welcome to the Digital Story Show, new tools for the creative mind. The Digital Story Show takes you inside with tips for the creative pursuit of photography, music, video, hardware, software, techniques, and hacks. You'll soon find yourself thinking less about buttons and menus and more about expressing the artist inside us all. Now the Digital Story Show with Derek Story.
January 2nd, 2007, The Digital Story Show with Derek Story. Today's topic, More Things I Learned the Hard Way. Well, welcome to the first podcast of 2007 for The Digital Story. I'm really excited about this year. I think we're going to have a great time. We have lots to do. There's lots going on. Photography is more exciting than ever, and we're going to be right in the middle of the whole deal. I thought I would start out today with something a little fun, a little different. You might remember a while back, I did a show called Things I Learned the Hard Way, which a lot of people really liked. And in that show, I mentioned that if you learn things the hard way, to send them on in, and I'll do another show, I'll do a follow-up show, where I talk about things that members of our virtual camera club learn the hard way. So I've been getting them coming in here and there and so forth, and I think I have enough now to do a show, so I thought, what a great way to start 2007 by sort of looking back at things that we learned the hard way in the past, and hopefully we won't repeat those mistakes in the upcoming year. See, there's sort of a theme thing going on there, and I think it is working for me. Is it working for you? So I have a few stories I'm going to read today, and there are things that members of our virtual camera club have learned the hard way, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to start out with a note from Landon Michelson. And Landon has submitted to our photo assignments and grab shots in the past. He's a very active member of our virtual camera club and a great photographer. And so he submitted a couple things here, and I'm going to start out with one that I really like. Okay, here we go. One of my huge pet peeves, this is Landon speaking now, one of my huge pet peeves is leaving things behind. I have left several things on location and wish I had not, of course. When I was a kid, I left my Pentax ME Super on a rock at Lake Yellowstone, the only camera I had for the entire six-week trip. I did not know I had set it down until midnight that night and went looking for it after a nagging feeling in the back of my mind. It had rained all night and I couldn't find it anywhere. To make a long story short, we found the turnout where we had parked 6 hours earlier in the pitch black of night. I walked down to the shoreline where the rain had stopped, like someone had drawn a line for the storm to pass. The camera was still sitting there, nice and dry, just like I had left it. Years later, I sold that camera to an in-law. Ever since then, I have a place for everything, and I check it before I leave a location. This is really a great point, folks. Pay attention. Part of my checklist is to unpack my own equipment, pack it up myself, and not to set things down. And boy, I tell you, this is something that I still do, and I'm like Landon, it just drives me crazy. You know, I feel like such an idiot when I leave a flash or a lens or something behind. Anyway, just to pick up with his story here, the more support materials and equipment you bring to a location, the more important this becomes. I also resist having many people help me pack it to and from the shoot. I don't feel, if I don't feel it or see it, it's too easy to get left behind. A place for everything and everything in its place. Amen. So a really great tip. Fortunately, Landon didn't lose his Pentax Super ME, which, by the way, was a camera I just lusted after in my earlier days of photography. Couldn't afford it at the time. Boy, I sure wanted it nice and small and light. Really great lenses. Was it Takamura lenses on those Pentaxes? Beautiful camera. But it's a really good point to, I think, it is important. Unless you have an assistant that you can really depend on, it's much better that you unpack your equipment, you pack it yourself, and that you always put everything in the same place. This is, you know, being an organized photographer is usually a photographer who doesn't lose a lot of equipment. Really great story, Landon. Thank you so much for submitting it. Here's an interesting story. This is from Kevin Miller. Kevin is also a very active participant in our virtual camera club, having submitted both grab shots and participating in the photo assignment. And he has, this is a little longer story here, but it's very interesting. I've read it a couple times, and I really like it. So we'll start right now. Hi, Derek. I heard your podcast the other week. Thank you for your candor in sharing your experiences. You asked for stories about lessons that we, your listeners, have learned. Mine is a painful one. On September 12, 2006, our house was burglarized in the middle of the day. We live in a nice suburb which experienced 10 such burglaries in just over a week. It might make for a good commercial that both of our PC computers were left behind while both of our Mac computers were stolen. Other items were taken as well, including the backup drive for each of the Macs. I had been proud of myself for getting a backup system in place with the help of my son. Yet the backup drives were connected to the computers and easy prey for the thieves. We lost a lot of personal data, including 20,000 photo images, about 60 gigabytes, and about 200 gigabytes of movie files, many, many hours of work. I have most of the movies on playable DVDs, but I did not have another copy of the movie files themselves. In addition, I did not have any other comprehensive backup of the photo images. It was quite a blow. So far, no luck in recovering the lost items. I've been able to recover a minority of the photos by requesting a return of images that I had shared with friends. In addition, one of your podcasts helped me recover some of my recent photos. I used one of the photo recovery programs to pull many images from my reformatted compact memory cards. I would not have known of that option without your podcast that discussed recovering photos from reformatted and erased memory cards. You also talked about backup in one of your podcasts and told how you save multiple copies of your images in more than one location. I remember that you implied that some people would consider you fanatical for your extensive backup scheme. Me? Fanatical? Obsessive? Ha! Ha ha ha, I say. No, actually, that's not in here. I just added that. And I lost my spot there. You asked the important question, how important are your images to you? At this point, I see absolutely no fanaticism in your backup routine. It seems very sound. After the burglary, we had replaced one of the Macs and I purchased two external drives for that single computer. I made duplicate backups on the two drives. I keep one at work and the other at home, often detached from the computer. Once a week or as needed, I take the recently backed up drive from the house to the office and then I bring the other drive home that night and do a backup until the drives are then again exchanged. This way I always have a copy of my data in two locations. I'm going to make an aside here. This two locations thing, or more than two locations even, I think is really important for the very reason that Kevin is talking about. Not only, burglary, but there's also, flood and fire and, all these things that we don't want have to happen to us. But, it's one thing to have something terrible like that happen to you and have to recover. And then it's another thing to lose a whole bunch of your work when, that didn't have to happen. Multiple backups in multiple locations, I think, is a really big deal. Okay, so back to his story. So anyway, this way I always have a copy of my data in two locations. There's a copy on the computer at the time that both drives are in the office for the exchange. Otherwise, there's always one drive at home with the computer and another drive at the office. This has been a painful experience, but with a silver lining. I have some great friends who felt terrible about our loss. They knew that the loss of my photos was particularly difficult. 12 families pooled some funds to get me a gift because they felt so badly about the burglary. I came home a couple weeks after the robbery and found a beautiful top-of-the-line telephoto lens and a 2X converter inside my front door. There was a beautiful note attached from my friends that brought tears to my eyes. Derek, I have dived into digital photography only recently. Your teaching has been great help. I hope to be able to say hi to you at Macworld in January. Well, that's just a really terrific story, Kevin. Thanks so much for sharing it. And again, just like Landon, you raised some really good points about, you know, backing up your data. It's not enough, in my opinion, just to back it up straight off your computer to something that's sitting right next to your computer, because I really feel like, you know, you literally have all of your eggs in one basket. You know, separate those locations. As far as Macworld goes, I'm going to be all over the place at Macworld, and a little bit later in the show, I'll talk about a few of the things that are going on there. But yes, I hope to see as many of you as possible at Macworld, those of you that are coming out to San Francisco in January, a little bit later this month. But we'll get back to the stories in just a second. So before I get to the next things that I learned the hard way, I wanted to do a little virtual camera club business. So the December photo assignment is closed, and we had a nice flurry of entries there at the end and some really nice stuff. And I had a feeling that if we got entries for Pool of Light, if we got enough for a gallery, that they would be really good, and it has definitely worked out that way. So that gallery should be up, here within a couple days. I'm not going to dilly-dally around, not that I ever intentionally do, but I'm actually not on the road when a photo gallery is ready to go up, so I should be able to get it up a little earlier than the last couple. I really encourage you when it goes up to take a look at it. It is just some really nice stuff, and I really enjoy these a lot. But that leads me to, we have a new photo assignment for January. And so I was thinking about, I love photo assignments that have to do with light, photography light. So I thought for January we would do glimmer, G-L-I-M-M-E-R, glimmer, as in glimmer of light. It's a little variation on pool of light. Obviously, pool of light can be like, you know, something being highlighted, you know, in the middle of darkness and things like that. But glimmer can be all sorts of things. It can be just a little reflection off water. It can even be, it doesn't have to be a literal interpretation. For instance, let's say an image that's showing a glimmer of hope. So there might not even be, you know, glimmer in the physical light sense there, but it could be an emotional glimmer of hope, and that could be the photo. So there's all sorts of stuff to do here with glimmer. You can have fun with it. It is our photo assignment for January. So as always, get it in by the end of the month. You can go to the submissions page on thedigitalstory.com to read about all the rules and regulations, which is hardly any. Just, you know, make sure that you get it to me so that it doesn't get lost in the other email, and I tell you how to do the subject line and to keep the photo 600 pixels wide or less. So glimmer for January 2007, and be sure to take a look at Pool of Light, our December 06 collection that should be going up here in a few days. Grab shots have slowed down a little bit, and I think that's mainly because of the holidays and people occupied with living life, although you can always take your camera with you while you're living life. However, I will say the couple that I ran right around Christmas were terrific. I ran two back-to-back, one with the county building in Denver, all lit up, just fabulous night shot, and then the little girl with the sad face that I ran right after that. So, you know, what's been coming in has been dynamite, but it has slowed down a little bit. So I just want to encourage you, make sure you take your camera when you're out living life, and hopefully you'll find a grab shot. And when you do, send it in. I liked having lots of grab shots in the mix with everything else that we talk about on this podcast and that we show on the Digital Story webpage. And finally, I want to give a shout out to our two sponsors, Boinks Software, And they make the fabulous Photomagico, the best slideshow software in the world, and it's only for a Mac. And you can find more about that by clicking on the tile that we have right there on the digital story, or going directly there, photomagico.com. That's photomagico.com. And also the great folks over at ExpoDisc, E-X-P-O-D-I-S-C, ExpoDisc.com. And they also have a tile on all of our digital story pages. And they make that handy device for using your custom white balance so that you always get accurate color when you're shooting existing light. Thanks to both of our sponsors for joining us for 2007. And I look forward to maybe finding a few more sponsors when I'm at Macworld here coming up. All right, well, let's get back to the stories because I have more things I learned the hard way. The next story that I have is from another active Virtual Camera Club member, Arnold, and I'm going to mispronounce his name. I just know it. It's Prasent, and he spells it P-R-A-S-E-N-T. And Arnold is from Austria, so he is part of our European contingency, which I have to say, we have a ton, I mean, really a lot of Virtual Camera Club members in Europe, in Northern Europe in particular, and a very active bunch over there, and some very, very good photographers. So very happy to have the European contingency represented on this show, too. Anyway, so I'm going to read one of Arnold sent a few, but this one here I really like. Do not, here he goes. This has to do with batch processing. Do not batch process the original file. Okay, that's sort of his headline there. You know, don't batch process the original file. Here's the story. This was a really bad weekend, and maybe I wasn't able to manage it in a better way. I guess I had a lot of bad luck. The rest of the images I had left from this party, I processed them with some new software and deleted all the files with a batch process. I wanted to convert them to JPEG from RAW, and I missed the uncheck the option box to delete the original. So he had this box, you know, to delete the original checked. So I deleted my original RAW files and now only have JPEGs left. Oh my gosh. You know, this is a good point. So you have your RAW files, and if you're processing them what I call manually, which is let's say in Photoshop with using Adobe Camera Raw, generally, or sometimes using the software that comes with your camera. So you're not in an application such as Adobe Lightroom or Apple Aperture that protects your RAW files and makes it pretty hard to delete them. You can do all the adjusting and duplicating and converting that you want, and they always kind of keep your original file tucked away. So if you're doing them manually, do make sure, especially if you're using actions and so forth within Photoshop, do a test run. This is what I recommend. Duplicate one of your files that you're going to process. You know, make a copy of it so all of your other ones are stashed, you know, away. And then practice your batch processing or your set of actions on this copy of an original file that you make to make sure that everything works the way that it should and that all of your files are protected, your original and the ones that, you know, are being generated out of the process. Once you're confident, with your workflow, then you can apply it to, you know, the images that you've captured. Now, that being said, and again, remember, this is a guy that, you know, maybe he's a little fastidious about these sort of things. That being said, I don't erase images off my memory card until I'm thoroughly satisfied that they have been processed, stored, and backed up correctly, and that I have at least two copies somewhere else before I take them off the memory card. So not only do I leave them on the memory card when I do my processing, but then I still leave them on the memory card until I have a chance to back them up onto a separate hard drive, preferably in a second location. Then, once all of that has happened, then I will go ahead and format the memory card and use it again. So, Arnold, thanks so much. That was a great reminder. I'm sorry for your pain here. And that, nothing worse than shooting raw and ending up with a bunch of JPEGs. I hope they were at least high-resolution JPEGs. But hopefully your story will help other people avoid the same problem. This last story that I have is from Brian Riley. And this one is unusual. And I've never encountered something like this before. And this is a story for when he was taking pictures at his son's soccer match. And, you know, the ability for us to review pictures on our LCD monitor, you know, as part of digital photography, kind of played out a different way in this story than something I've run into before. So I thought I'd share it because, again, I think it's fascinating. Hello, Derek. I enjoy your podcast each week. It's the only one I never miss. The Things Learned the Hard Way podcast week was a good one and very timely for me. Something happened 3 weeks ago, which I will never forget. My lesson falls into the kind of photography I think you mentioned at least once that you particularly don't like to do. Use soccer games. Yes, I do use soccer games, but I love shooting the action part of it. I think what Brian remembered is I don't want to be, you know, shooting big group shots of just soccer team after soccer team. I want to take pictures while they're playing. So he did remember that part, but I do love shooting while they're playing. I think it's very interesting and challenging. Anyway, back to Brian's story here. One of the things I learned about sports photography was not to become part of the game. It was in reference to where you are positioned so that you don't become a distraction for players or officials. But in my case, it had a different meaning. Yeah, Brian's talking about, when I've talked about sports photography, is to make sure that, you know, you don't interfere with the action on the field or on the court, either by flashing things in people's eyes or being in the wrong position, anything like that. And so, you know, he's referring to that, but actually he has a whole nother twist on this. So anyway, back to Brian's story. I was at one of my son's soccer games. His team was losing 2-1 near the end of the game, and their best player had the ball going toward the goal. He chipped the ball in a little too far ahead and tried to beat the goalie to it at the top of the box. I was positioned at the end of the field parallel with the top of the box. The ball and both players got together at the same time. The offensive player kicked the ball and it bounced off the goalie and they both collided. The goalie went down and stayed down and the referee blew the whistle. I started looking at my shots that I had captured at the moment of impact. I heard one of the players say that the goalie had been kicked in the head. I could see in my shot that the offensive player's elbow had hit the goalie in the face. I mentioned this to the referee's assistant who was standing next to me on the sideline. He looked at the picture on my LCD. The goalie got up and the referee walked over to the assistant and asked him what he had seen. He said that the guy hit the goalie with his elbow and that he had seen it in my camera. The referee turned around and pulled out a red card and ejected the player, then blew the whistle to end the game. I couldn't believe it, and said to them that it was an unintentional elbow. Needless to say, I will never volunteer to show a picture during a game again. And really, in the picture, you can't actually see the elbow hitting the goalie because his other hand is in the way. So you can imagine how little detail was present when you're looking at the image on the camera's LCD, which is what the referee's assistant was doing there at the game. This is a fascinating story, Brian, and again, something that I have never encountered before. But it's a good reminder, and I do shoot a lot of sports photography. A lot of it, you know, mostly involving kids, not so much the adult stuff anymore. And I do review my pictures during the game. But, you know, somehow on some level, I never really show them to other people. during the game at all. And for no other reason, I think the main reason is that I don't want to be showing someone pictures and then have the action start and then miss a shot. So it's probably, you know, more kind of just for straight photography reasons. But now after reading your story, I'm definitely not showing anyone pictures during the game itself because, you know, on one level, I think what's interesting is that, you know, you could prevent an injustice, but on another level, you don't really have control over how those images are interpreted by the referees or any official. And especially, as you said, when they're looking at it on a very small 2-inch, you know, or 3-inch at most LCD screen. So I think, yeah, it is better just to not become part of the action in any way. Good calls and bad calls happen in sports, and I think it's better just to let those things stand on their own merit. Great story. I really liked it a lot, and I think a whole bunch of us now will be guarding our LCDs very carefully during sports action. Okay, so just before I sign off, I had mentioned a little bit earlier about Macworld, and you know, Macworld is coming up at Moscone Center in San Francisco the week of January 8th, next week, if you're listening to the podcast when it's released here. And there's all sorts of stuff going on. I'm teaching an aperture workshop on Monday and Tuesday of that week. It's intensive. I'm teaching it with Scott Bourne, and it's going to be really good. We did it last year. And all sorts of speaking engagements. I'm going to be in the digital photography experience off and on all week. I'll be at the O'Reilly booth off and on all week. And I'm spending like 3 nights in a row speaking at the Apple store. And the third night, Thursday, January 11th, is really interesting. It's being put together. There's this podcaster event being put together by Adam Christensen's son, and he's the host of MacCast. And he's pulled together a whole bunch of podcasters, and we're all going to be there for a meetup, and all sorts of really good people are going to be there. Leah Laporte, Alex Lindsay, one of my podcasting buddies, Scott Bourne, is going to be there, Merlin Mann, Andy Anako, myself, Dave Hamilton, Shelley Brisbane, Bill Palmer, just on and on and on. Really going to be a great meetup, and it's going to be at the Apple Store there on Stockton Street starting at 6 p.m., and we're going to have a good time. And then there's going to be sort of a party afterwards at Julian's, which is right over there at the Metreon, that starts at 8 o'clock. And all you have to get into Julian's is a Macworld Expo badge. So it's going to be one of the many fun things going on. If you're going to be there during the week of Macworld, make sure you look me up. I'll have a custom carabiner keychain for you. And I just would love to say hi and look up all the speaking events. I'll probably post something on the digital story probably that Sunday before the show starts, so you can see everything that's going on. But this thing on Thursday night should be a lot of fun. I just wanted to give you a heads up. I think it's going to be a riot, actually. All right. Well, that should do it for this week. Thanks again to Landon Michelson, Kevin Miller, Arnold Praysent, and Brian Riley. Thank you so much for your things that you learned the hard way. We'll probably do another one of these shows, so if you have a couple things that you learned the hard way bouncing around, send them on in. Just send them to Derek@thedigitalstory.com. Make sure you put in the subject line things I learned the hard way, and we'll take it from there. Hope to see you in San Francisco for Macworld, and get out there and take some shots. All right, see you next week. Bye-bye now.
Your questions and comments, email them to questions@thedigitalstory.com. For show notes, weblogs, and informative articles, visit www.thedigitalstory.com. We'll see you next time on The Digital Story.